spread the truth. Document it. Prove it. Make it irrefutable, and you too will become dangerous to those who admire us in lies and enslave us.
Anti-whiteism.
But because they are lying, it's possible to expose them. And this is their Achilles heel. By comparison, we have nothing to hide, therefore we have no reason to lie. And we wouldn't want to, even if we could. Truth is a far superior weapon than deceit. It's a weapon which is denied to them. And in the end, it will be the decisive weapon that destroys them completely.
Fucking pay!
Rumpelstiltskin, the children's story, what does that have anything to do with the people running the world?
Everything, Josh.
It's just a fairy tale written by two weird Germans.
It's not a fairy tale, Josh. It's a warning.
A warning?
Yeah. Rapunzel, she steals the baby. Hänsel and Gretel, she put him in a cage and want to eat him.
Yeah, but why tell weird stories? Why not just say it outright if you're going to warn somebody?
Because the reptilians don't understand humor and they don't understand metaphor.
Metaphors? What do you mean they don't understand metaphors?
They are not creative. They are not visionaries. They are not seeing things visually. They are only knowing what already exists and what may exist based on statistics. They are very good at math. They are very good at science. They are very good at like lawyer stuffs and banking, you know?
Lawyer stuff and banking?
Yeah. That's why Jesus spoke in parabelen, because that's where he can transmit a message that the Lemurians, the real humans, they can hear it. And the reptilian ones, even the hybrids, they're like, what is this dude talk about? We have to destroy him. He's crazy.
So you're saying these people, these reptiles, they can't read between the lines or what?
Yeah. They have no access to novelty. They have no access to the unknown. They only know the known. Very boring. And that's why they need humans. If it wasn't for that, we already would be wiped it out of it.
So you're saying they need us, but they don't like us?
It's not about like or not like. They have the emotional intelligence of a doorknob. But they are very highly intelligent and like the other kind. The one that I don't really know, like math.
You're bad at math?
Very bad at math. Numbers slip through from one eye to the other. There's no reception there because I am from the Lemurian bloodline.
Lemurian bloodline?
Yeah. The original human, the post-ape one that was here, that was slightly...
Wait, stop. Lemurians? What is that?
Lemurians. We are the first that were altered because they came here and it was just apes. And then we are like, they are like, oh, we got to need some humans that are smart so they can dig for gold and stuff because they need it for the ships and for stuff. And then, yeah, they genetically engineered the first humans and they were the Lemurians. And they were very much in touch with like trees and the grass and the wind. And we are highly emotionally intelligent. And we had a huge cox. And
of
then
course.
They got jealous of us and they tried to wipe us out.
Seems like they're always trying to wipe you out.
Yeah, Josh, why do you think the food is poison, the air is poison, everything poison? Why do you think there's war? It's not humans. It's reptilians.
Yeah, but why would reptilians want to poison the world?
Because the poison lowered the frequency, and they can only survive in a lower frequency. Because they want our world. But they're not going to get it. Because the frequency is rising.
What do you mean the frequency is rising?
Because the Earth is having a fever. The resonance, it's rising. And they're going to be a blackout, and then we're gonna start making love to nature again. Get back in touch with them, you know what I mean?
What are you doing?
Oh boy, holy smokes, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. What can you say about that? Well, I guess more Lanz von Liebenfels, less Roy Beck. Now, that's a kind of a hard one to figure out if you're new around these parts, but hey, we'll give you some time. Hope you're all doing well. It's Friday again, once again. It is upon us. Hope you're all having a wonderful afternoon, maybe early evening, or maybe it is evening already if you're over in Europe. We are having a great show lined up here for you today. Very entertaining. A lot of fun stuff to get into. We got our guest host in the wings. He'll be joining in. I think he's filling up on some of the racisms, and I think some of the coffee as well, so he should be here soon. Jeremy McKenzie Will be joining in here soon. But yeah, hope you're all doing well. Thank you for being here, ladies and gentlemen. If you're watching live or later on in the archives, hope you enjoyed that intro. It's funny because I came across the recorded version. Don't even know what I'm talking about, but those watching the stream will. The Hives, I think it was a Swedish band. And then I found the one guy who did the Hiles, which was kind of funny. Not too bad. Hate to tell you, I told you so. That's the old AH Austrian painter slogan right there for you. Pro 420 over on Rumble, gifted 5 subs. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. That's very, very kind of you. So yeah, ask a German who controls the world. I think more esoteric stuff, right? Kind of as it gets more popular with like demographic statistics and stuff like that, which is fine. I get that. That has its place. But then more the kind of the esoteric, you know, kind of Agatha, you know, kind of that's the Lanz von Liebenfeld type of school. You know what I mean? That's going to be highly valuable. Just recognize what is possible. Dream big and bizarre. Throws the enemy off too, you know, to be honest. All right, Jeremy, are you in there? I think he is. Maybe. He's waiting in the wings. Yeah, there he is. Oh, check. You might be unmute. You're coming in by default, I think. Muted.
Hello.
There we go. We got you.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. How's ist things?
It's okay.
Yeah?
It's okay. Yeah.
Well, it's good to see you, man.
yeah, you too. I enjoyed that guy's channel. I had a good kick out of him.
Yeah, that was good. I found the name of the guy on the Instagram account there. It's not what was his name again? I sent it to you. I can't even remember. Oh gosh.
Olaf something.
Oh yeah, that's the account, right? The Olaf account. It's kind of funny.
His name, who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? Josh Leandro Solic, half German, half Italian. Born in Germany, growing up most of his life in the US, I believe. Hence the kind of the weird accent that I couldn't quite place, you know.
Half German, half Italian, 100% X's.
There you go, exactly. Before the Italians kind of switch sides. But yes, anyway.
North Italian.
Well, there you go, exactly. What kind of Italian? Bring me the red glasses and the...
Yeah. What kind of Italian?
What kind of Italian? All right, how you doing, my friend? Everything good?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm in Canada, so I mean, by default, it's
well.
Just,
you know, my condolences.
We're still alive.
Yeah, for now. Are you feeling the what? How's the energy thing up there? Is it is there a crunch at the pump, or what are we talking about here?
It's pretty bad. It's I think it's topped over $2 a liter in a few places. I'm not sure if that translates to gallons in the U.S., but it's my area is about $1.70, $1.80. I would estimate it'll be $2.50, maybe $3 by the end of the summer. So. It's probably jumped 60%, I would say, since March.
Not bad. It's probably going to go up more. We'll see what happens. We'll see what they do, to be honest. But, but you know, before we go on, you have to pick one.
Estonian, I just realized I wanted to use my red ice mug, and I forgot about it last night. I was gonna wear the T-shirt, too. I was going to come in all show. You got to grip the hell out of this.
Yeah. So we both have suits on. It's very classy. Yeah.
We're very measures. Important people, Henry.
Very important people. Okay, here you got to pick one. Estonian haircut or Turkish mustache?
Ooh, Turkish mustache or Estonian haircut?
Look at that. You can see that, right? It's coming through on your end, right? You're seeing my feed.
I'm going to go with the mustache.
That is a proper mustache, I'll tell you. Yeah. It hangs all the way down to the chin almost, you know. Hard to eat with that, though. Was that, I can't figure out if that was a tall tale or something, but it was something, someone died of their mustache hair that they were ingesting so much.
It's called in folklore as a Turkish face shield. A mouth covering of the Turkish. I don't know.
A mouth covering. I think I'll go with the tactical bowl cut on that one, to be honest. At least you can, you know, it won't be in your way. Chat, what do you say? One for Estonian haircut, two for Turkish mustache. Some people said both, obviously, which is, yeah, that's not a bad take, to be honest. We can pick that. I would do the haircut. Yeah, see? Estonian haircut. Yeah, kind of. The mustache is kind of in the way. It gets kind of hard.
You can trim the mustache, though.
No,
the haircut.
Well, you could shave it off, too, I guess, the bowl cut, right?
But then, you know, now you're just...
You could do a fash cut. I mean, you won't... there's still enough on there to do it, you know? So.
Yeah. Right. Maybe he's working his way up to it. So.
I don't know what that is, but it's very admirable. It's very bold.
It's not a real person, is it? I mean,
he's in the Estonian parliament. This guy.
Oh, that's terrifying. Okay, well, there you go. Well, he's trimmed around his ears, so his hearing is protected, and his eyes is very practical. He wants just covered in hair, but leave a visor area in the hearing.
Well, you see, when he puts on that Vendel Viking helmet, he just fits perfectly. it's like always on there. You know what I mean? Oh gosh! All right. Anyway,
and this other guy's got bad teeth. I think he just doesn't want anybody to.
Maybe he's
bad breath keeps it in. The smell in catches it in.
Oh my gosh! We call that snurbroms in Swedish, which means a snot break.
Well, we have a name for that also. I'm sure you do.
Oh gosh! All right. I don't know. I kind of don't want to get serious, but I guess we kind of have to a little bit at least. We got some stuff to talk about here.
The secret to being alive is, you know, don't take it too seriously.
Yeah, that is true. I guess to be honest, we have to have some fun in between. It's getting anyway.
We'll kill you while we make jokes about it at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, at least we can have fun on the way out. You know, I mean, I think, frankly, though, I must say, I think that's partially kind of a key to success is to kind of. I don't know, maybe this is misinterpreted, but let's see if you read me in the right way. Taking things less serious. Like, you need to be disciplined in the things that you do, but care less in terms of, like, the fear of failing, for example. Or the fear, do you see what I'm saying? Like, the more you give no fucks, in a way, the more kind of successful I think you are, to be honest.
Yeah, and I've experienced this in my previous career in the military, and I've just recently taken up boxing the last couple of years, and it's just... In fighting or anything like that, it's a stressful. It's very serious. You could get very hurt or killed or so on. But you want to be as loose as possible. That doesn't mean you're not paying attention. You're not you're lazy. But you're trying to relax as much as you can without expending extra energy on things that don't matter and tiring yourself out. But if you're in that kind of a looser, more relaxed headspace, you're more calm. You're more able to process things and think, and you don't the stress is not as much hacking away at your ability.
Yeah, that's true, I think. Yep, exactly. Isn't that why serious really drunk people survive, like car crashes and stuff, because they just bounce around. Yeah. They don't even try to fight.
Some of the guys just go limp and you're fine. Yeah. Some of the real like hard guys I worked with before who were from, like JTF2 and places like that, they were, obviously very serious guys, but also very, they would crack jokes and, have serious but not. It's hard to describe. A little more laid back, and it is not the right attitude, but relaxed tension, I suppose, maybe.
Exactly. That's the spirit right there. Hey, Billy Biz sent one. Yes, I hope I didn't miss that. He was so kind. He sent one over on Donor Box. We're switching over. Did you ever run Entropy? Did you have any? I assume you had issues with that too, by the way. Just I want to ask because I didn't yet.
I what happened to them? I heard something happened.
I don't know. They lost. They didn't. We had like 2 months of like, super chats and stuff we got, and they just haven't paid us yet. It's for like January and February, and we're just like, what happened? And they're changing. I get you could be banned or deplatformed or debanked and stuff. We've been through that. You've been through that. You know how that goes. But they just weren't communicating. So we're just like, what's going on? We had to write them like 10 emails, and then eventually we heard back like, oh, we lost the processor or something, So anyway.
Sure. I kind of ended my relationship with them a little while ago. You guys are still on Ko-Fi.com. They terminated me also. So
did they?
Beware. Yes.
Really?
What's the other one? It was this DonorBox. I gotta find some other way to.
Oh gosh.
Drift here.
I am. No. I'm sorry about that. What do you use right now?
Pretty much just Rumble, and I have a. There's another one called LiberaPay. So it's not software out of I think it was a French developer. So there's nobody even complained to. It's like complaining to Bitcoin.
Interesting.
There's no one to call. It's just a software protocol that just facilitates the transfer from your, from the customer, the purchaser, whoever to whatever account that you stipulate. Like it's like you can use Stripe, you can use all kinds of different things.
Interesting. All right. I gotta look into that. That's good that there are options. I just wanted to bring this little super chat by here real quick from Billy Biz. I think hopefully you sent that right at the tail end of the show because I didn't see it during. So my apologies. Bill Biz, but very kind of you. Thank you so much. He says, wow, the doxer seem to be what ethnicity? Amazing. And that was what we talked about, the SPLC story, obviously. Yes, so thank you. Thank you, Bill Biz. Appreciate that. That's nice of you. And here's the big man himself. Holy smokes, look at that. King Albert coming in here with a super challenge here. Holy smokes, 570. Look at this guy, King Albert. He's incredible. Thank you, sir, as always. He says, happy Friday, guys. Great show yesterday, Henrik. You did an excellent job breaking down the gay response from the normies about the SPLC drama. Huge shout out to my man, Jeremy. You're awesome, dude. Shout out from King Albert to you right there.
Thank you, sir.
Can't wait to watch the stream. Hope you're all having a great weekend. Take care. Thank you, Albert. Love you so much. King Albert, give him a shout out in chat, everybody. He's incredible. He's our angel investor. He's the dude. He's the man. Hope you and the fam are doing good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right. So, yeah, let's dive in, I guess. We got to derail and talk about something depressing. But someone...
let's talk about dead children for a few minutes.
Well, when we talk about Israel later, I'm sure we'll get to some of that, too. But, yeah. So someone visualized the... Now, to imagine the legal, by the way, but from 2008, which is kind of a late start, too. I think you should have... But if you want to look at, like, migration waves into Europe and, of course, into America, North America overall... when did we start? When did it start in Canada, really? 70s? Like from non-Western countries?
Yeah, I think it was 65 or 67. And within a couple of years of that, it started. And it was sort of a trickle. And I was curious. I just looked it up a year ago. I was like, how many Africans were there in Canada in 1965? It was about 60,000. That's it.
60,000. You
know? 60,000. So
do they keep track? Do they record ethnicity in the legal statistics?
I think they do, but it's getting, you know, they, not so much with crime. We're starting to follow the European example there, where it's just man from place. but yeah, it kind of slowly, you know, you get your foot in the door first, because first it's, we want doctors and engineers and super scientists and all these kinds of things. And then like, well, what about their aunts and uncles? And then eventually now it's just, we need 10 million Indian Uber drivers. And, since I would say 2013, 14, 15 or so to now, it's been about 1 million people a year. So within the last 15 years, thereabouts, there's almost half the people that currently in Canada got here in the last 15 years. So yeah, our economy, infrastructure, everything is just absolutely breaking under the weight of all this extra.
And there's no brakes on this train. They just like, let's just run it into the ground, you know, as quickly as possible. That's what it feels like to me.
These graphics are great. There's one for Canada, someone for the United States.
Yeah, I have one for the U.S. Oh, did they do one for Canada too? I want to find that. But again, keep in mind, this is just illegal immigration, right? Each line or dot here represents 100 people. Imagine the legal stuff then. Holy smoke. Cocaine Rib Job says, none is too many. That's right. We got you. Yeah, we have America. That doesn't include Canada, though, I think. But let me run the American one here. No, it's just America. Illegal immigrants into the U.S. started in like 2020 or something there. But someone said, like, it looks like a plague, like locusts, right? Invading into your crop area and ruining, eating all of it, right? Like,
yeah. They're coming! Like that tornado meme.
It's coming. But this is from 2020 alone. I mean, and you have decades preceding that. Maybe the illegal immigration wasn't just out of control like it's been the last few, 10 years or so. But now it's like with legal, what's the distinction anyway? Why even make a distinction? What does it matter?
The other point that I like about these is they specify where they're coming from as well. Not just it's just migrants or like where they're coming from. And in Canada, it was mostly the Philippines and India. And in recent years, it's expanded more to like Africa, Central Sub-Saharan Africa, which is, of course, where you get the best human capital. That's where all the geniuses are coming from and all of the improvements will be coming from. And it's not, you know, there's none. No significant migration anywhere from any European countries or... I think when the graph or the animation that this fella started for Canada in 2015, or so, I just played last night, I can't remember. So third and fourth place was the United Kingdom and the United States.
Right.
And within a year, not even registering, it's just like this, a flood of people, mostly India, Philippines, Africa, and China in a lot of ways as well, which our government apparently is just blatantly in bed with, like we're not even pretending not to be anymore. They've signed an intelligence sharing agreement or something.
Yeah. I can't see the actual visualize when it's coming in. This is the only graph I can find for some reason. I'm sure visualize Canada I was searching for. Just U.S. is coming up. I guess this is a summation. Still, 2024, 1.28 million. Again, that's elite. So are they coming over just from the U.S. side then, obviously? Because they're not coming like from, you know, Kamakachka or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, mostly India. They're mostly being flown here. And a lot of it's being subsidized. So it's our own government programs are paying... for all of it. Yeah, here it is. I found the link here.
Shoot that to me. Forget it.
Let's put it in there.
Oh, over there. Okay.
Yeah, Telegram.
Yeah, do it on Telegram. Yeah. I can pull it up. Perfect. Okay, cool.
And it's, I mean, you know, they're saying, oh, we want skilled immigration. I mean, we know what the truth of this is. But,
well, yeah.
These people are, like, how do you justify it? It's just almost exclusively India, the Philippines, and what is that, Congo, Nairobi, Nigeria? Like, why? Why those places? They don't have an answer for that. Like, why just exclusively those places? We have history and long connection to India.
For some reason, it's the Commonwealth thing, right? So it's like, oh, we therefore did some legal... It's easier legally to bring them in or something? Like, we already have an agreement with them. They're in the Commonwealth, so just ship them in?
I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of people in the United Kingdom are looking to get out of there, so you'd think that would be the natural, the first stop, because three-fourths of the country's original stock people came from Ireland, Scotland, and England. So that would be your first... I said last night, if you had a home made of oak... And you wanted to do some renovations, are you going to go and get plaster and, you know, get stones? And you would get more oak trees to, you know, renovate and expand it, you know, keep the house as it is and not make it out of something else entirely and expect it to look and feel the same.
Yeah, Liquid Zoo sent the link there. Thank you, man. I appreciate that, too. I mean, it's just someone did the reverse because we know there will be a reaction to this, obviously. Where's the reverse one? Here's one. This is one they did out of Europe here, but that's the reverse one right there. 2027 to 2043. Okay. That long?
Well, that's the best case scenario, that they just simply go home and become what it's very likely going to be, is a widespread multi-decade war. I saw that Spain recently naturalized, or trying to whatever that means, give them citizenship papers, basically 500,000 people, and they're lining up around the block, clogging up the cities, and it's just all men 18 to 40, 50 years old. But that's not just Spain. That will also enable them to travel throughout the European Union zone. So that's 500,000 men. And it's been on the minds of people for years, and I've thought this year that, you know, that there's no evidence of this, and nobody has said that. Well, if I put a gun on the table and no one says anything, that alone is concerning. You know, I didn't say I was going to do anything with it, but it's there. Why have you imported millions and millions and millions and millions of men, fighting aged men? There's no women, children. It's 90% men between 18 and four, or younger, 15 and 50. Is this a precursor to like a Tet Offensive style sort of, you know, when the bat signal goes up, we all attack, and it's everywhere, and it would be devastating. All these people are already inside the country, and it wouldn't take very much, I don't think, to foment, you know, as much as they accuse us of this. We're the ones preparing in defensive mode for the inevitable of a sort of a race war. So they'll just, you know, get whitey, everybody. The white supremacy has to be stopped finally. So everybody, you know, get them. And we're already outnumbered inside of our own home, especially in the numbers that matter under age 30. It's far worse. It's another thing people don't take into account is, well, yeah, we still have this many people and still that many. Yes, but half of the people we do have are over the age of 60.
Right.
Yeah. So that is not there, you know, it's far worse than people realize, I think. And I think we're much closer to a very serious catastrophe than people want to acknowledge.
Yeah, so we have that recipe now with the perfect storm, I guess, or the tornado, whatever you want to call it, right? With like energy restrictions, higher prices everywhere, potential food shortages. Obviously, we will check in a little bit later on the Iran war stuff. But that whole thing just feels, just drag it out and make it as confusing as possible for as long as possible to do like insider trading on the stock market or something. It's like, war is off, ceasefire, prices go up, buy in, you know, and then sell. Okay, it's on again, you know, like that's the tactic. It's just confuse as much as possible until you just get tired of monitoring it. But the consequences of it are going to be very real, obviously.
It's frustrating because it's very clearly not what they're saying it is. It's not a war that makes any sense. There's no military mind or strategist or geopolitical expert that can explain to you why any of this needed to happen or makes any sense in the first place. It's some sort of threat to Israel, and then they're not allowed to have nuclear weapons, and then we need regime change, and then they're jailing women. And it's like, well, what is the reason? And then, you know, they've, you know, blocked the Strait of Hormuz. Well, they better not block the Strait of Hormuz, because then I'm going to bomb them, and then I'm going to block the Strait of Hormuz. What is going on over there? No, there's no real rhyme or reason to any of this. It's just sort of chaos. I mean, what the Iranians are doing makes sense from a strategy perspective to defend themselves and advance their interests. But what the Americans are doing doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And that's either an indication of there's multiple people trying to pull strings against each other, or this is some other long, you know, sort of gay op thing that they're doing here, because you've lost your strategic initiative. Like, you don't tell and advertise a country you're going to be evading them. You don't make an appointment. It's like, we'll be here in 2 weeks and we're going to bring all this. You'd have all this ready to go in the first place and then, you know, strike all at once with overwhelming force. You don't do this. This is just disastrous policy and insane. And we've seen senior officials from the White House quit. I think the chief of the army, whatever position they were called, the Navy, head of the Navy was also removed. Multiple people have resigned. There's rumors that Trump had to be escorted out of the Situation Room because he was in a hysterical fit and wanted to, you know, drop nuclear weapons on people. And so it's, who knows what's going on over there. I think he's lost his mind, honestly. I think the Epstein stuff has really broken him. He really enjoyed being the most popular president ever. And now he's saying, he's quoting CNN, which was always fake news. And now he seriously said, well, they've given him 100% approval rating on CNN. See, I'm amazing. And he said this with a straight face. It's just, you know, and saying things like the Epstein files is all a hoax and who cares about that. And it's we're so far in, people are just absolutely inundated with craziness now. One scandal after another, to the point that now that you've got congressmen running around doing UFO disclosure and no one cares. Because
no one cares.
That's boring. It's just, that's who cares. Oh, 13 scientists are dead. Boring. I don't care. The CIA said, was it William Cooper or Casey? When everybody is, you know, doesn't, everything that people believe is not true, then it's over, because it's impossible to know what's going on. And it's just overwhelming and people just give up. They don't even try. Everybody just kind of reverts to zombie mode. And that's ideally, if you're running sort of a totalitarian state, that's what you want.
Well, that's why the nothing ever happened thing, in and of itself, although it's true, it's also a psyop, because it's like the boy who screamed wolf, right? So Constant chaos. It's doomsday. World War III is always near. Eventually, you just get fatigue on that level. But then once something really actually do happen, no one will pay attention. It's like, this is fake. Yeah. You know, it's fine.
I think that's also just like immaturity to some degree. A lot of those people are young, and that sort of makes sense. But no, things definitely do happen. I remember 9/11 happened. Yes. COVID happened, and all, you know, these things happened. Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Like, things happen, but generally it's a much slower pace. It's like you know, building a structure. Like they want to, you know, this big fortress constructed overnight. So something has happened, but in reality, it could take 10 years to build. It's a slow, arduous process, and you don't even start to see the results of what the work is until long after the fact it's already begun, which is what this is with the demographic replacement, the mass immigration and stuff. There are people smarter than me that I initially would fight against when I first started and sat down, you know, nearly 10 years ago, saying that this was put into place a long time ago and this is the eventual end goal and this is, you know, where we're going to go. But the evidence and the symptoms and signs of that weren't anywhere near as readily apparent as they are today. It was still happening. Like it's like you've already received the wound. You're not dying yet, but you will die. You know, if you've just been contracted something that has given you cancer today, you may be alive for two more years, but you are dead now. It's already over. There's nothing you can do. Not saying there's nothing we do about this situation, but it's not instant feedback. Like, we live in the instant feedback dopamine scroll world where everything has to be now, 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 click, 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 go, go, go. But that's not how real life works.
No, exactly.
They set a policy meaning for 10 years out, 20 years out to achieve a specific objective, not, you know, my Monday we're going to do this and by Friday it's going to be over.
Yeah, that's what people want with the TikTok brain. It's like, if it's not apparent in front of you at this moment, it possibly can't be a plan or something like that, right? But we'll get back to the war stuff and the oil crisis and all that a little bit later. But I would want to show this too. Mormons, I guess Utah is like, you know, cooked as well when it comes to, all the Mormons are engaging in bringing in the migrants as well. This is a longer video, so we're not going to watch the whole thing. Yeah. But Trojan horse in Mormon, Utah. We are being replaced. Somali Muslim candidate runs a Catholic refugee machine funded by LDS tithings, apparently. But here's one. Where is this? Is this the airport or something? Utah? Let's check this out here.
Lake City International Airport. Refugees arriving from all over the world to a warm embrace. Today, they're from Somalia and Nepal. Among those here to welcome them and help them is Martha Archuleta.
We've been here 2 years.
A volunteer with Catholic Community Services.
It's an opportunity for me to live out my faith.
About it's always some liberal white
will arrive here this year to a place that stands out, particularly among red conservative states, for its attitude toward refugees. They are welcomed here, unlike at least 30 other states that have said they are not welcome, especially those from Syria. Based. That's where Khalid Abu Arida came from, along with her husband and three children.
Was it dangerous there?
Yes. And my husband two times went to jail.
Makes you wonder what's going on in their minds when they get here. Hayden Batar is the director of Immigration and Refugee Resettlement for Catholic Community Services. There are over 60,000 refugees now living in Utah.
Yeah, it's all these Catholic groups. All these Catholic groups.
Let's bring in one of our primary religious enemies and rivals in the world. Larry, there's some Catholicism. Look at that. Get down there and breathe in that Catholicism.
It's Jewish groups. It's Catholic groups. It's Protestant groups. It's Lutheran groups. It's Muslim groups. It's all these Abrahamics. The Hindus are jumping in on it too. Obviously, do they have? Do you know if the Hindus is there an Indian immigration service run in Canada or something shit like this?
I'm sure there is. It's hard to keep up with the amount of fraud going on. There's a number of diploma mills, they're calling them. So basically, trade school, trucker driving, whatever they can. And I had an email come in earlier. There's a fella who worked at the commissionaires. It's what it's called. It typically employs retired veterans. It's just kind of daytime security, like somebody to watch the cameras and open doors and kind of stuff like that. And he was not only passed over for a position, but demoted in favor of putting an Indian in charge of everything because the other Indians demanded that that's who be in charge, not a white guy. So he lost his job essentially and was demoted because ethnic nepotism of people who aren't from here. And that's just one story that's happening to somebody every day.
Look at this, this Muslim woman's going to drive a forklift. What the hell? You couldn't find someone like a Mormon boy in Utah to do this job.
He's actually under the forklift right now. She ran him over a little while ago.
That's right, exactly.
They're looking for him, but he's actually underneath.
Walla Akbar! Holy shit, okay.
Takbir!
Yeah. What is this here? So they put a Somali guy in charge of the Catholic. This makes total sense.
Muslim and also working for Catholic organization.
Yes.
And working a lot with the LDS, folks. I think that word, how can we help you? I hear that all the time, especially the work that we do, all the refugees that we're bringing. Every single bed that they sleep with comes from the LDS Church. That support never wavered from the LDS Church. And also, as a Muslim, when 9/11 happened, where the Muslims were going through a lot of challenges in the United States, the first
person
that reached to us...
I mean, they shouldn't. It was misdirected, as we know, but still, the PSYOP is the official thing of, the Muslims did it, go to war, and that's like, oh, we're also going to build a mosque now right next to the World Trade Center Memorial. All right, anyway, I don't care about that. But just a point, right? Just like LDS, Mormon Church, together with a Catholic charity, hires a Muslim from Somalia to bring in more people and have it funded by Mormons. Wow.
It's funny that, I don't think any of this even is real. The only real religion now is the anti-racism religion, the anti-white religion. That's what it is, because you can bash, in Canada, you can burn all of the Christian churches to the ground if you want. You can trash Muslims. You can, do all these things. You can't really do anything about Jews because that's super.
True. Yeah.
But
there is part, they're special
in religion. That's who kind of manages the anti-racism, anti-white religion in the first place. Because in any other time period where whatever the dominant power system was, it used to be the church in Europe in the Middle Ages. And if you could, oppose the king or the prince or the Baron or something or whoever, but if you blaspheme the church, you
send $5 over. Good episode and good guest. Despite all the hardships, we must continue to struggle. Fry, Zotsiala National.
Thank you. That's right, Andrew. Sorry, Jeremy, that talked over you there. Go ahead. That's a good freeze frame right there, though, isn't it?
Beautiful.
Allah Akbar. Just add that.
Look at that SSRI face.
My gosh.
Right.
It's no grandkids and our little brown cuddly teddy bears filled that little hole, that little void. I would assume. I mean, if she does have grandkids, what is she doing there?
I don't know, not taking care of them. They're probably African grandkids. But yeah, that's the new religion. If you go against the anti-racism, anti-white religion, your life will be destroyed. Similarly, you'll be jailed. You'll be attacked. You'll people, you know, make attempts on your life, and you'll be unpersoned and ostracized and all that kind of stuff. So that's obviously the dominant power structure. There's nothing else that you can oppose or fight that will do that sort of damage to your life. So that tells me and should tell everyone that that's really what the program is. And if you oppose it, you're destroyed. And if you support it, you're rewarded. And that's what these people are all doing. It's sort of like communism, appeals to the lowest common denominator and failure inferior people who want to feel important and virtue signal to cover up their deep sense of meaninglessness and purposely not having a family to care, nothing, just sitting around being an old grandmother that doesn't have a family, you know, a box of wine and a pile of cats, and she's busy, you know, making herself feel like her life was ever worth anything by importing half of Africa into her town so they can murder high schoolers where she lives.
I think they're secretly accelerationists. They're on our side. They want us to wake up. It's a shit test. They're getting to it. I can't tell you how many of these, the local election by like Mustafa Mahamir I've seen now, but here's one from Utah then, Mormon country here.
Utah leads the nation in charitable giving. Yet our leaders take us for granted. For far too many Utahns, the American dream is slipping away. Corporations are pricing us out of our own homes. Raising a family is more expensive than ever. And even though we spend more money on healthcare than any nation on earth, nearly 300,000 Utahns are left without health coverage. But together, we can change this.
What are you leaving? Come help me.
And that's why I'm running for Congress.
Yes.
We will start you will.
You'll win too.
Between their child and their career. We will build housing that's actually affordable and restrict corporations from taking over our neighborhoods. We will treat
He's serving power. Food. As a regular person.
Full coverage.
I'm
every
just
American
like you.
At a lower cost for our families. Politicians love to say we can't afford any of this. All the while they're funding genocide and giving billionaires tax breaks. We already showed the
You are a part of the genocide.
So is he okay? So is he's anti-Israel? I assume he's a non-APAC candidate. Okay, this is a tough choice. Can we get him in and cut off the funding of APAC and then deport him later? Is it a possibility? I don't know why we can't do both.
He was talking about Utah, and I just remember last year, a couple of years ago, I was, you know, had some interest in the Mormons. I was reading about the history of Utah, and I didn't know that they'd actually fought a war against the United States and won.
That's how they ended up there, right?
Right. And they're like, well, okay, fine. They just call it off. Like, it's not worth fighting anymore. So that's what Joseph Smith and all of that's what they all wanted for. It's like, I can't wait for Somalians to take over this whole place. That's what they did it for. That's the legacy of Utah. This guy has nailed it. Good for him.
There you go. That's a screenshot right there. It's our time to lead. There you go. With that face. That's it. Yeah, I mean, Mormonism was like this kind of uber white, you know, thing, right? I mean, it was just like they're kind of like the Amish in a way, but they're like with technology, they're utilizing things, and you know, no alcohol. They're staying away. Now it's like Salt Lake City now has like more gay bars than like San Francisco, or you know, it's just like so quickly you can undermine and subvert these religions. There's no tradition within them at all.
It's funny that I think part of the key of it is that like part of, you know, dare I say, the Aryan spirit has been removed, where, you know, money is nice to have, resources are nice to have, but it should never take a priority or a higher order than your honor and your loyalty and your, you know, duty and responsibility to your people and your family. And when you know, that's something we used to maintain and, you know, teach our children and, you know, keep as a value. Now that is no longer the case, and it's all just money, everything, and everything is incentivized financially. All these people, all these groups, all these organizations, they don't care about any of the things that I mentioned. They may say that they do, but when it comes down to it, and they do it for cheap. You could throw $10,000 in front of them, they'll happily sell out their whole town, and it's not even enough to buy a used car. This need or this obsession or love of money essentially has been a huge part of the problem. We know where the money comes from and the fiat, you know, money scam. So people who are just spiritually, you know, attracted or desire and you know, that's what they're thinking about when they're going to bed at night, when they're going to work every day. It's just money for the money's sake and the things that it will buy, and never any cost or thought to the cost of what it will do and what the effects of this will be, or who the other people it's going to affect.
It was a good clip. I guess we could play that now regarding the money thing, or at least how, you know, the approach to money, right? Of like, as you said, when it becomes about the love of the money in of itself, as opposed to seeing it as being used as a means towards achieving goals. Like, you know, whether we like it or not, you got to have money, you got to have resources, you got to have, you know, manpower, like, to get things done, or you largely become irrelevant. So the other side of that, flip side, is like this. Well, money is, well, I understand, like, money creation, the way it's created, is evil. Like, I understand that concept, but money in of itself is not evil, right? So then it becomes this, you're not a good moral person until or when you are destitute and own nothing and poor and you know, that's now virtue within. I mean, of course, that is kind of a Christian mentality that's brought that in, obviously, as well.
The, you know, the currency used to be... Well, sort of like in the Roman Empire. I mean, we're going to go there again, but they would have the triumphs and stuff. And to be a big shot back then, and to be somebody famous or popular or celebrity, you had to do something. You couldn't buy your way up there. You couldn't just be a rich guy. That didn't really mean anything. It was somebody who defeated the Gauls or you know, protected Rome from the Carthaginians or whatever, some kind of valor, you know, feat of, you know, maybe military accomplishment or some kind of technological achievement or some kind of great work that benefited other people. And they'd throw a parade and say, look at this, you know, great thing people did. That was what put you higher up in the social ladder, not money and stuff and things. And now we've completely reversed that. And now money, we have businessmen and, you know, money goblins running everything. And that's what people look up to. Look at he's got a Lamborghini. He's got this, he's got that. What have they done? Nothing. They're stock trading and they're shorting currencies on the stock exchange. And that's not impressive to me at all. We used to, you know, build statues around, you know, the kind of men who, you did incredible things and sacrificed immensely for the rest of us. And that's the message we wanted to send to our children and the rest of us, because we all embrace that mentality. Everything improves dramatically faster because everybody's working for the collective good instead of their individual greed.
Yeah. Yeah. There's here's the clipper. Gottfried Feder, I think his name is, right? The economist. I mean, we don't need a clip to tell us that libertarianism is fake and gay, but anyway, here it is anyway, because we all need this. Check this out.
There's a bunch of talk about junk science and conspiracies. UFOs, flat earth, lizard people.
Yeah, like the interview we played with our favorite German half-Italian guy.
And yet, people don't notice the massive pseudo-intellectual fraud known as libertarianism. Already in 1919, libertarianism was comprehensively debunked by Dr. Gottfried Feder in
Gottfried
his manifesto
Feder.
On the breaking of intra-slavery. Feder pointed out that there's a big difference between industrial capital and loan capital.
Was that?
The song in the background is like, is that Aqua band?
Oh, is it? I remember that. They were like the Danish band, right? From Denmark.
Yeah, I think they were the Barbie girl guys. Yeah, that was that.
Who's it? I'm a Barbie girl. Oh, my gosh. That brings back some memories, unfortunately.
I remember that. It's massively sideways interruption, but my brain just...
Interesting. Is that what... Okay, let's... Okay.
Difference between industrial capital and loan capital. Between...
I don't think that's what it was. Was it? Let's play it.
Breaking of intra-slavery.
The melody sounds like it, but I don't think that's it. Anyway,
not the song, but it's that band. I'm always...
Oh, it's
following.
Okay.
Feder pointed out that there's a big difference between industrial capital and loan capital, between real risk taking and parasitic scamming.
Yes.
Unlike libertarians, he was thus able to account for the market manipulations of Jews. In 1933, Feder's anti-Semitic economics were implemented in a depressed, largely agrarian country in Central Europe. A few years later, GDP was third in the world.
Third in the world. April is International Anti-Semite Appreciation Month. Well, thank you.
The news.
That's right. It's time to talk about Jews, everyone. I think we've... I mean, the whole show so far has almost been about that, but who knows? All right. Okay. Where were
libertarianism is funny. It's for kids, essentially. It's kind of the you know, when they say it's the pipeline to fascism, like, well, kind of. I think most people are attracted to it because they understand, at least on some level, intrinsically or instinctively or from experience, that we're not free. We're all slaves, and this is a very unfair, broken, oppressive system that we're living in. And people are oppressed. Why? Because you're fat and full of cheese, and, you know, watch porn all day and have Netflix and so on. You're not a golden cage is still a cage. And that's where we are. So they want to be out of there. and they, you know, go to libertarianism and then shut it down. And I would talk to these guys and say, like, well, that's never going to work. Like, well, why? Because someone like me could exist and I will take everything that you own. I will take me and my friends and come to your little libertarian village and you'll be my slaves then. Because you have no way to collectively defend yourselves because everyone's just, well, it's not my problem. Everybody just mind their own business and you do your own thing. You're just ignoring human nature that other people exist and other, you know, intentions and aggressive people, or the Chinese show up or somebody shows up. Anyone, anywhere who's decided to just run as a team is going to roll your whole civilization of libertarians very, very, very easily. And no one will want to get
if they attack you, you just stop trading with them.
That's how we stop Genghis Khan, I think.
I mean, I think libertarianism was that kind of the full stop, like here but no further. I mean, I get your point. It didn't end up being that because people who kind of move in that direction were luckily smarter than that. Yeah. But like Milton Friedman, Mises, Walter Block, like all these libertarians, they are, you know who's, right? For the most part, anyway.
And it's naive too. I think it appeals to some, not they're intelligent and they're mature people, but they are under the false assumption that everybody else is like them or most people are like them. And, you know, like I'm an adult, I'm not going to bother anybody. I know you guys wouldn't. And like, if we could all live somewhere, mind our own business, it would be fine, but that's not most people. And you know, most people are not responsible. Most people are lazy. Most people look to take advantage and take the easy way out all the time and cheat and steal and lie and do all these things. So You need some sort of organization to manage things at a bigger scale than a household. You know, managing your own household as one man is its job in itself. 2, 3, 4, 5 is a street and then a town and a city. How is this going to be collectively managed at all? It can't be done. And so there has to be some sort of governing body to do this. If you want anything like a police department or fire department or a hospital or transportation or anything like that. So just a government is required.
Then
you have Blackwater or Blackrock.
The whole laissez-faire thing, right? That's what it was about. It was literally about like how to make sure that the monopoly that some people managed to achieve could just grow bigger and bigger and bigger, and there were no stops. Government is bad, standing in the way. Look, government currently is bad, obviously, but we've always had some type of system that runs things for a reason. It's not just like you're going to reject the collective wisdom of your ancestors and every single tribe that went before you, that we can't just have a system where people are like deciding things or even an elite actually that's like good for our people and accordingly we'll make policy, you know,
an aristocracy that was merit based, you know, back in the day because they were the ones that did the work and they care, because not everybody's the same. Some people are satisfied to just work in a mine and be drunk half the day. Like that, they're fine with it. They never want to do anything more than that. Fine, you know, but other people want to do more things, are more ambitious and they're more, forward thinking, and they create businesses and they buy. That's why they end up as being like lords and so on. And all the people are employed by those people, you know, in the first place. They end up kind of forming the leadership of the society naturally. They just end up that way because it's merit-based. It's, you know, not this, you know, communism equality stuff, but that's also been replaced. We don't have that anymore. We have, you know, members of parliament and congressmen and people like this who are just installed and didn't earn anything to get in there. They're just put there to be businessmen and middle manage everybody. So the libertarianism is a disaster. And if within 5 minutes you could just think about this and go, well, this will never work. It's like taking the wheels off your car and thinking it'll be fine. We got here. Everything that they've inherited that they think they can continue to enjoy was constructed, created, maintained, and fought for by collective group actions. So, it's like taking all the branches off of a tree and scattering them into the woods and say, they'll all be their own trees now. No, they'll all just die. Yep. All the branches are dead and the tree will die also. And that's the end of that.
So, it's like feminism. What's backing up? Libertarianism is feminism, but like circling around money as opposed to, you know. Anyway.
Just give up on fighting, essentially, is what it means.
Yeah, who's enforcing the system? Who's telling you that, like, now we're going to do it this way? And if someone comes in to disrupt you from doing it this way, you have to have force at the end of that. There's just no other way about it. Or you lose it, you know what I mean? I was pissing off some of the Christians with some of the show in the church there. The Catholics were cocked. Here's another one for you. Answers in Genesis. Humans all belong to one race, so there's no such thing as interracial marriage. There we go. There's only one race, the human race. Man, the Bible thumpers are Israel zangwilling it here too for us, huh? How about that? Genesis fans.
Biology is over. It's just not. That's biology pseudoscience now, or is it?
Why are they doing this? Why
do, it's weird because you can identify Cuban skeletons racially. So I don't. That's weird. Somebody forgot to tell God.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. You can, especially if you read like maybe. Well, yeah, Genesis too, but like obviously the Old Testament, which is the Jewish, specifically. Yeah. Very ethnocentric Jewish orientation about kill this race and exterminate them, and our race is the best one, or whatever. How you can come to this conclusion? Anyway, I'm not going to speculate. But anyway, so this is the replies were great, though. Let me put it that way. Some of the replies were great. They were definitely going hard at them. So that's good to see. You see this one? There's only one race, the human race, and then they link this one up here.
Jeez. What in the hell?
It's your local goat throwing festival.
Don't look, Philip.
Don't look, yeah, that's right. It's a, Philip's doesn't a goat. Mean, I forgot.
Doesn't need any more reasons to go to Africa.
Is this India or Africa? I can't even tell. Like maybe it's like Sri Lanka or something. It's kind of in between.
Imagine seeing this floating along on some 17th century ship, some galleon in the with binoculars. What are they doing? Appear to be throwing animals around, like
Cornelius, exterminate them all.
I think they're drinking urine, sir. Of course they are.
Oh God!
It's holy. Yes, it's very holy.
Anyway. Well, let's do the. Wait, this was a good clip you linked up on. I was like harvesting. You know, with everything about the internet is farming and harvesting now.
I do it too. I go to your guys' page. I go, what do you guys got? That's a good one. Yeah, get that one. Dude. That's
I'm taking that one. This one, you know. Yeah. Anyway, this was a good one regarding the. That's the big question, right? So, despite all the propaganda and subversive stuff and. Governments are replacing us. Major religions are working against us, replacing us. Everything, is that right? Will the white man be pissed off enough? That's the big question, right? Will Whitey actually fight back? Here's a guy, tattoo face. I'm not sure who this is, but anyway, it was a good point. Let's hear him out here.
All right, so I see a lot of people talking about the fact that the white population is going down and that white people are set to become a minority in the near future. And essentially that white people or people of European descent will go extinct. I wish we could bet on this because I'm going to tell you right now, that is never going to happen. I would put the house on it. This would be like investing in Bitcoin in 2009. I'm sorry to burst someone.
Kelsey, Polymarket, are there any bets right now running on this?
It's bubble if they don't like white people, but us going extinct is 100% never going to happen. And you can look through history and see this over and over and over and over. I'll break it down for you. Basically, what it is something called white dormancy. What it is when everything's good, white people are docile, they're happy, they want everybody to come in, check out their stuff, they're very selfless. Then when it reaches a certain boiling point, they freak the fuck out and snap and start taking over everything until they become sufficiently exhausted. And then they just settle down with the civilization and the things that they've conquered. And then they just go dormant, like nothing even happened. Like, oh, it's good. Everything's fine. This can be seen with the Vikings. This can be seen with the Napoleonic War. This can be seen with the British Empire. This can be seen with the Roman Empire. This can be seen with 1940s Germany. This can be seen with the Hundred Years' War. This can be seen with the Crusades. It just keeps happening. And every culture has their own conquest-oriented ethic. But when you look at history, white people just seem to do it to a very extreme extent. We're just a very martial people. This is something that just happens over and over and over and over and over and over again. So some people are like, are you worried about this? How do you feel about it? Or should we be worried? And as someone who knows like the bare minimum about history, no. Literally fucking not at all. Well, yeah, it's different because technology now and they can da-da-da. Listen, no, it's never going to happen. So if you're banking on that, you either know nothing about history, have a room temperature IQ, or you just hate white people and you're wishful thinking. Because again, this literally happens nonstop, like a loop through history. And there's not one single thing that suggests it'll ever be any different. Because when that pressurized cooking actually pops, there's no negotiating, there's no slurs, there's no guilt. There's literally nothing you can do at that point. And I personally feel like in this past years, if we learned anything, white people are 100% pressurized and cooking as we speak right now.
We're
so
cooking.
Again, am I worried about
cooking,
it?
Ladies
absolutely
and gentlemen.
Not, and neither should you be.
Cooking a stew. All right, what do you think? I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, are we the same men, though? The chemical warfare, the biological warfare, I don't know. It's just, I mean, I believe in our people. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
but it's not the same currently. It's not the same stock, is it?
I mean, I'm sure as in the past, that's always been the case as well. Everyone would have said this isn't the same, and it never is the same. The challenges are always different. But,
true.
and this is obviously this is apocalyptic level that we're talking about here. It could go either way, but I think the essence of what he's saying is true, and I don't think I think maybe some people are misinterpreting it, where it's like, don't worry, it'll just take care of itself. No, there's a lot of work to do. I think he said so in some of the comments. He's like, no, there's a lot of work to do, obviously. What he's saying is that, but we're going to do it. What's happening, my opinion is that we're kind of Darwinism to an extent, gene selecting. So the people who aren't going to fight and want to die, essentially, are doing so. And or are traitors, or just, want to lay down and, submit to sports ball overdose or something. They're going to do that. And there's going to be less and less of them to be in the way of the other people who want to fight and will continue to live and will continue to resist. So it's going to kind of shift in that way, where there's going to be less and less docile, I don't care people. They're going to be reduced in numbers. And then the people who remain are going to only be the ones who are the fighters. And like with our guys and our groups up here and in other countries, initially it's very small. There's only a few guys that come in, but those are the hardcore ones. The situation forces the most committed, the most prepared, the most courageous people to the front in the beginning, in the initial stages of that. It kind of, it's like a immune system reaction or something. So it's almost like as we go forward, you're either going to sink or swim. And the people who survive and find a way to make it are going to be the fighters who are resourceful and have find a way to survive and continue, and the ones who don't are not. And then eventually you're only going to be left with those resourceful fighting spirit people, and they're going to be organized and they're all going to know each other because they're going to have to survive. And then, where does that go? You think you can imagine. So, I mean, I wouldn't be doing any of this if this weren't true. Like, I'm a symptom of this. Oh, yeah. I don't think it's all my responsibility or yours or anybody's to fix everything. But in our own way, like, had none of this been happening, I would just be very easily minding my own business, playing video games with my kids or something and being fat, and, watching hockey or something, right? The playoffs are on right now. But instead I've done, all of this, and there's lots of other people doing the same, and there's more now than there's ever been. And it's kind of a similar situation to the Chinese I was thinking about recently. I was talking to somebody about the Japanese. Like, I like the Japanese. The Asians are generally, decent folks. They're smart, they're capable and whatever. And somebody said, well, China's, messed up. But I said, well, China murdered everybody who would fight back. The Maoists and the communists mass murdered, 60 million people or something during the purges. So the DNA structure, the tree of everyone in China who was like, no, I'm not putting up with it. They're dead. They mass murdered them all. So the overwhelming majority of the people who remained in China to have children and for three, four generations later are all obedient yes men that put their head down and do what they're told, which is why China is that way now. You've got a massive amount of people who are just kind of, submit to a totalitarian government, and they're fine with it because that's the families that remain and that were left over. So ours is kind of going to go the opposite way, I think.
Yeah.
Tomahawk sent $5. The problem is not that there aren't enough of us. The problem is there are too many of them. That can change very quickly.
Well, it can change very quickly, to be honest. Here's one more from
Intrusive _ Thoughts sent $5. Sometime you just have to roll the hard six and become a crunchy meat popsicle.
okay. There you go. but I do think it could change very quickly. I mean, it could go, look, it could be a slow, just grueling process as well. Who knows exactly? But I'm just saying there are many variables up in the air, and we shouldn't just, you can't just like, open I see the doom demographics posting, and then Elon, Doge designer on X, and then Elon retweets that, like, Europe is dying, we're running out of people, kind of thing. Is like, no, it's just like this will correct itself at some portion. It's not just, can't just look at the statistics and say, well, if this it's technically true. If this continues all the way, we will go extinct. There will be no one reproducing. But that's barring some other like type of chemical, everyone goes infertile or something, that's not going to happen, obviously.
And the whole plot relies and hinges upon us never really activating at all. It's like smothering someone to death in a nursing home with a pillow. As long as they don't wake up, everything's fine. But if they do, you're in big trouble. There's not one single European country anywhere that is organized and, on its own side and committed to fighting this anywhere in the world. If one of them anywhere gets loose,
Right.
It will, yeah. You know, obviously understand this, the gravity of the situation it's in. And then if it's smart, which of course it would be, support and help others. It's like if Poland, for, like as just as a random example, I don't really know the situation in Poland, but let's say Poland just goes full hard nationalist mode and it starts funding and supporting its allies in Germany and in the Czech Republic and in France and so on. And then if another one, then it's over. It snowballs from there. We're not even really trying to fight back. It's like, well, you're losing. We're half asleep, you know, rubbing our eyes, getting out of bed while being punched in the face. And then people are saying it's over. But just hang on. Just give it a minute. We'll see.
We're losing plenty of battles, but we haven't lost the war, obviously. Right?
Which is alerting people. I mean, there's entire families getting wiped out here all the time. And how many dead 10 and 12-year-olds with their moms and dads, you know, pancaked on the side of the road by an Indian truck driver need to see before, you know, it starts getting feisty, and it's becoming that way. I never would have believed Canada would be like this 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And within 5 years, it went from everything's fine, don't worry about it, to we got to get these Indians out of here. That's the mainstream opinion here now.
Exactly.
I would say 7 out of 10 Canadians hate Indians, hate them. Like people in my family and other people I've known my whole life who are the sweetest, kindest, you know, women, you know, love everybody. And, you know, they're coming home going, I can't take it anymore. Get these Indians out of here. I cannot handle this one more minute. And they're the most tolerant, empathetic, nice, loving people that I've ever met. And they can't handle it. So this cannot continue forever. And they're going to, you know, replace most people in the government. They're already halfway doing there. The military is being completely replaced by migrants. Like that's now the state policy. They want 300,000 armed migrants to suppress the population. That's DMD policy. And the police as well, like, we're also going to be here. Like these changes they're going to make are going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. I'm only 40, you know, and there's a lot of guys, people that are 15, 16, 17, 18, you know, 20s. They're not going anywhere. So we're going to eventually reach this point where they can't even pretend that it's not what we're saying it is. And, you know, it'll be one protest or one demonstration or one thing away where an Indian cop shoots somebody's dad or mom or kid or something. And then, you can't, the genie doesn't go back in that bottle, you know, and then it's, it might not even happen to be here. I mean, the Southport murders in the UK, went around the world, you know, and that you don't see the effects, because nothing ever happens, right? It does not going to happen overnight, but I guarantee that a lot of people were moved and changed by seeing that happen.
They're watching, they're paying attention, they're kind of waiting in the wings. And I get, you know, look, it's late. It's late in the game, but as I said, that doesn't mean that somehow we're just going to roll over and give up, I think, collectively. You know, some will, obviously, and they already have. They don't care. But, I mean, it's about, we care about the ones who have a will to life and want to actually fight. That's what's important.
And you need that immense pressure, to be cheesy, but that's how you make diamonds, Henrik. You know, you need that intense amount of pressure. If it was a slight bit of a struggle, you don't get the effort. You have to almost go to like an existential do or die crisis to get the top peak performance and effort out of someone.
That's really when that's when it matters. The other stuff is just kind of, what is that? As you said, we're just surfing of the success of others. And now, of course, it's, you know, no, we have passed the point of like where that success now has become a, you know, not a vice maybe, but like an inhibitor of sorts. But then at the same time, we're being royally screwed over in every, you know, area, basically. Yeah. Which is spurring people then, therefore, to do something, to change. This is, it's almost like, you know, they're pushing us up against the wall, and I'm almost like, thank you for that. We actually need, we need this.
Well, it's funny, they call us the accelerationists. They're the ones accelerating it. Had they maintained the program in 2005 or 10 and just kept pace with that, it would have taken another 40, 50 years, but you would have got there because everyone would have been comfortable enough to justify not dealing it, not doing anything about it. But instead, they did 40 years of progress in about 4 years. And now you can't even afford a house. Like,
I have that, you know, clip. I'm going to play that from Toronto,
Luckily, my children and their mom are housed and have that. But had I not gotten into the real estate market, I couldn't now. If you had $500,000, that's not enough money to get a mortgage in Canada because you still need another $300,000 or $400,000 loan.
Is this sustainable?
6% that you're not going to be able to pay. It's $3,000 a month. And so $500,000 isn't even enough to get you anywhere to live in any major city in this country. The average, the house I bought when I moved here out of the army was about $250,000 in 2017. And now it's worth about $800,000. I didn't do anything to it. I put a new roof on it. I could not have afforded it then. And it's only been less than 10 years. Right. So almost every Canadian if you're not a millionaire, you're priced out of the market now. And that's not going to change anytime soon. So you know, where does that go? You've got an entire generation of people. I can't imagine being 19 or 20. You get out of high school to do what? You can't work. Where? With what job? And why? Because you're never going to have enough money to do anything other than pay taxes and be a slave. So your options are suicide or fighting.
Like,
and that's, again, going to filter out.
Hence the, what do you call that? Just inflation, is that what it's called? Devalued position of, and of course, here we are, so... But streamers, that's what people want. They want to be YouTubers and streamers, and they just want to do things online. They want to. They want to farming used to be, as we said, putting seeds in the ground, you know, harvesting. But now it's like content farming, or now it's like this weird digital reality that we're in.
A friend of mine asking about that. He's like, "Oh, you make good money?" He's like, "I don't really. I don't make very good money, no. And I've spent almost everything I own in like legal, you know, defenses and so on. It's not. This is not a way to go. If you're trying to make money, this isn't the way to do it. This is not a good."
I'm saying it's different. I mean, you put on a I even hate the term show, but like it's a program, right? Like you want to. Yeah. Inspire people, you want to help to wake people up, you also want to keep them informed, and yes, it's partially entertaining as we're on this fucking crazy, you know, surf adventure together on the Kali Yuga wave here, but anyway, but what I'm saying is like this, you see these streamers that come on, they sit there all fucking day, like 7, 8, 9 hours.
Ryan 73, just 16 cent, $20. Jeremy for fewer.
Double Romans, there you go. Double Romans. Nice, thank you, appreciate that. It's a weird time.
People not to do it. I mean, if they want to be, you know, content creators or whatever. I mean, people need it's something you need. You know, art and the spirit is as important as, you know, productivity in agriculture and industry. Because if your heart is dead and your spirit is dead, you'll have nothing. You won't have any will to fight anyway. If your morale doesn't exist, what's the point? So, you know, keeping that alive is very important. I encourage people, if you're a musician, if you're an artist, if you're a writer, anything, and you want to contribute something, you should, because we don't have anything. We don't have our own spaces. We don't have our own programs. We don't have organizations, nothing built, nowhere we can go. Nothing is just ours. And these little internet spaces like this, like mine and yours and elsewhere, this is basically what we're down to. This is where you go to find the rest of the people like you now, because it's not out there. It's illegal or it's bad, you know, it's evil and you're not allowed to do it. So where do you, you know, go to where everybody knows your name, as they used to say. And we were out just the other day, errands and getting stuff. And I live here. I'm from here. And I don't know where all the Canadians are. They're not in the gas stations. They're not in the malls. They're not in the stores. They're just nowhere. Because, I mean, they're around, but you don't feel at home and you don't feel comfortable. And there's nowhere. I miss that. I miss seeing other just Canadian people who are in my age range or speak my language and have the same East Coast accent. And we may, hey, did you see this or that happen? And we would just have conversations, but that just doesn't happen anymore. It's hello, welcome to Starbucks, Connecticut. Like that's every interaction everywhere. So it's just go out of the house, get what you need and get the hell back as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And you just die. We draw power and strength in each other as a collective. You need to, you know, speak to other people and you get ideas, you get excited about stuff together, and that generates energy. You bring other people in. That's why we had these community centers and halls and churches and things were important, because that's where, you know, that's a folkish energy is.
Yeah, of course. Mannerbund. This is just what it always been. Yes, we've lost that, but you're true. It's true. It's in the meantime, as we're, because we don't even, I make that point all the time, we don't even have a people in that sense anymore. We've been stripped of everything. We're atomized and isolated and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, now we have to kind of like piece this back together again. And we're using the means that we can right now in terms of us using the means of communication that we can would be literally retarded. But it's not the end game. It's literally just the beginning process of something that will grow into something, right?
And again, it's not like that guy said, it's not just going to happen automatically. You have to do the work. It's just, it's there for you to do.
Correct.
And it's sort of happened with the convoy or the post, you know, the COVID lockdown area in Canada. And it just became a lot of these gatherings and freedom. They're just kind of parties, but people kept doing them and it was a lot of drinking and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was a lot of like pressure valve, stress release, because people were locked in their homes and couldn't go anywhere. And we've largely returned to that. Everybody I know is depressed. A moderate amount or a severe amount. And I think a big part of that is because what do? You work if you have a job and you're not going to be able to afford anything. You go home to be miserable, to think about going to a job that you're going to work forever, to never be able to afford anything. And you can't, there's nobody to talk to. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to enjoy because everything is some sort of parade for Indigenous rights or, you know, whatever. It's not nothing for you anymore. So you just kind of feel like the kid at school that nobody wants to talk to. And I think that's what most people in the country are starting to feel like. So it's imperative that we bring that back and start creating our own, you know, whatever, just an event of some, just go have some hamburgers and just hang out with people and you know, re-engage with each other, because that's, you know, that's basically the engine that generates everything that we do, is being in each other's presence and sharing each other's energy.
Yeah, I agree. Correct. Let me take a couple of these here real quick. You got some donos. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Ronald B simply just says, nice, important work. Well, thank you, Ronald. Appreciate that. Very kind of you. We had one here from NASCAR, I think, as well, who said, Red Ice is my favorite podcast ever. There's nobody that compares. You never wear weird suits or talk about imaginary talking animals. You're very normal and mentally stable. Ham legs.
Very stable, Gene.
Well, thank you, NASCAR. I appreciate that. Is that a stab at Philip right there? Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't know. Talking, it's not animal? A cartoon. No. It's an item from an Earth store that no longer exists and has magic powers.
Just, I was going to, don't I have like a Moomin troll here somewhere? We can do a talking character. Moomin Foomin. All right. Anyway,
yeah. My ex-wife was working on it. It was an inside joke. And then like a while later, I was like, where was that store? Anyway, she was like, oh, it was, it was gone. I was like, the store that she'd bought, and I could never find it. I had the community was like reverse image searching it, looking for it on the internet. No one can find it anywhere. So I'm like, did you get this from Needful Things or Stephen King?
Yeah.
Like, buys it. Oh, this is great. Turns around. It was never there. It's a dilapidated building. Like, what happened? You know,
I remember that one. That's funny. Okay. So we got that. You mentioned the clip there. We got to play that then. The Toronto area. And it's funny, he says normal people, meaning the ones buying,
political class,
just Epstein normal, just normal and Canadian.
Yeah,
white
before
people.
You did it, it's a couple of years ago now, maybe two. It was a leaked report, but you know, did they want it out or not? I don't know. But the RCMP is the federal police here. It's like the FBI, and it's more of an all in one institution, very politically biased and corrupt and not great. You know, my least favorite police organization. But their assessment was there is going to be civil unrest at a minimum very soon, because the facts on the ground are that people don't have a future. They'll never be able to own a home, which is devastating, because you're going to bring a girl home to your mom and dad's house and live in the basement and raise a family in there? Like, that's just not going to happen. So, you know, just the inability to have a dignified life. You know, when my dad was growing up, or even when I was a kid, like if you just had a job, you know, you could work at a grocery store. Like, you're a part-time manager of a grocery store. You could get a mortgage. You're not going to live in a mansion, but you could get a decent, you know, modest little house and be fine. That's no longer a possibility. So what's the quality of life there? And why should people work these thankless jobs and pay these backbreaking taxes and climate change and pay for Ukraine, all that, when they can't even afford basic things that every generation of everyone has already always had? Like, people would rather go back to the 1800s and live in a log cabin somewhere on an acreage. At least it would be theirs. It beats this. So there's going to be a very serious problem. And the Canadian state doesn't have any men. There's no army. There's no cops. It's just this bare bones. So they want to mass recruit 300,000 migrants and give them guns and 2 weekends of basic training. That's it. And that's going to serve as the security state coming up. And this clip you're about to play is exactly why.
Yeah, let's check this out, and we'll have more to comment on this after.
How long would it take a normal person, such as you've described, a person with a good, solid, full-time job, how long would it take them to save up the minimum down payment on a home in Toronto?
Well, if we look at just the GTA, particularly Toronto, the reality is they never could. That's the reality today. Even with falling prices, even with prices have fallen like 26% in the GTA, they still couldn't. If you're running about $110,000, $115,000 income, you have to pay rent, you have to eat, you have to live, you pay taxes. You could not possibly accumulate a satisfactory down payment for a house price that's still like a sort of just under $1 million.
Even if you could, would you be able to qualify for the mortgage?
No.
Okay, so a normal person with a normal job cannot save up the down payment or qualify for the mortgage. So we're back to now mom and dad.
In Ontario, they are absent from our practice, yes.
Absent from your practice. How about British Columbia?
They were absent sooner. in British Columbia.
Some of the other larger cities, Calgary, Edmonton, that are not in
Well, Calgary may have caught the Toronto virus, so we'll see what happens. You know, the biggest change in 30 years I've been in the mortgage business is that much more normal salaried people could buy houses 30 years ago. The difference is striking. It was quite normal for the produce manager at a grocery store and a part-time nurse to be able to easily get 5% together and buy a home and comfortably manage it quite successfully. Those days are gone.
Those days are gone. That's it. Well, for now, obviously for now, temporarily, but mass deportation is this one, magical button that we can press that would solve, like, you know, not everything, but like 90-95% of the issues right now. Like even the birth rates in and of itself is like down to the fact that like it's just too many Indians or Africans or Arabs or whatever it is, right, everywhere. And no one wants to have kids in those circumstances. And then you bring them in. It's only a temporary fix anyway. And they also stop having kids after a certain while. But, of course, the replacement is still kind of successful, unfortunately, within that. But, this is going to have real consequences. And people are going to get fucking angry. And so be it. We didn't choose this path, but they're doing it to us. And there's going to be consequences for it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. This is a crazy thing to ask people to accept. You just exist and support me, the fat Epstein class. I love that term. That it's an indigenous premier, like a governor up here, mentioned. He called them the Epstein class, and of course, the usual suspects. What do you mean the Epstein class? I mean you. I mean the child fucking political monsters, and primarily a lot of Jews, a lot of money that like to do these things. That's what he means. You know, like why we. Instead of saying what is this? No, we're just gonna, you know, be offended that you would dare acknowledge that any of that is happening. Yes, work to death forever to support those people so you can live inside of an old, you know, Toyota hatchback in a parking lot with a bunch of fentanyl addicts. That's this future. That's what they want you to accept. And if you don't like it, you're an extremist. And they're bringing hate speech legislation and guns are banned and all of this crazy stuff. So it's like they want to, you know, some sort of revolt, and people think that, oh, don't fight back. That's what they want you to do. Or why? So then they'll genocide you. It's not what they want. They're impotent cretins. They believe that, like, well, we'll just make it illegal and then it'll be done. This is always what they've done in every other time period. They're not creative. They don't know how to, you know, get what they want. Otherwise, they just use force. Do what we want or we'll hurt you. Well, we'll make that illegal. We'll put you in jail. You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to wear that. You're not allowed to look that way. You're not allowed to talk to him. You're not allowed to. That's how they do everything. But in a way, it's actually you creating the perfect weapon, because you're narrowing the field of activity and things people can do to eventually. And each time you do it, there's a cost. The people see this and realize, well, you're doing a little bit of tyrannical nonsense here, and not just the peasant class, but there are some people in, you know, judiciary and judges, lawyers, doctors, everywhere who are going to look sideways at it and go, what are we doing? There's going to be a percentage of people that you're carving off each time you take an extra step to enforce this madness. And the people who are fighting you are obviously not going to give up. They're just going to find another way around or under, or, you know, go between whatever new obstacle you've put in the way. And then again, you're going to try to find an even more extreme way to shut them down, which is going to create more enemies. And it's just going to keep building this tension until it blows up in their face. There was a guy, what was his name? Yeah. Goebbels said something about this.
That guy.
Yeah. That's just what happens. It's just human nature. You can't do this to people. Rather than tell, you know, this is why we have to do this. Let's have a discussion and we'll, you know, bring you around to our way of thinking, and you'll see that this is why we have, you know, this makes sense. We have to do this. It's better for everyone. That's not what's happening. It's do what we want or we'll hurt you. That should just be the government of Canada's slogan, or everyone's, really.
Yeah, it lasts for just so long before the eventuality arises that it's always been a dictatorship, an iron fist in a velvet glove, right? And it's like kind of, we you know, put you to sleep. And I mean, it's Swedish society is very much like that as well, right? But at the end of that, it's a metal baton, a rod across your face. You know what I mean? Like, you or get back in line, up your ass, exactly. You know?
But it's the mask that keeps them safe, because that's what allows people to lie to themselves and say, no, that's just a sweet old lady who's looking out for me. You know, that's the whole government protection is. But then it's forced to take the mask off and reveal itself to be this disgusting monster. And that's what, you know, is going to, you know, encourage and embolden people to attack it because it's hideous and evil. It was the perception that it's not those things, because that's always what they've said. I made a video years ago. It said, force a tyrant to act like one, you know,
right,
rather than, you know, anything else. If just make them be them and everyone will see what they really are.
Reveal their hand.
It's the lie that this is a democratic, you know, people's republic or something, that this is a lie, but they want you to believe that, and you get them to expose the lie by making them prove that it is by acting like maniacs. And you do that just by pushing their buttons and, you know, walk up to whatever the line is and just stand there. And that makes them too uncomfortable. So they'll move the line back and back and back, and they'll use that baton to hit anybody that walks near it. And more and more people notice. It's inevitable. But again, if it was just Canada or just the United States, it's every country everywhere.
Yeah, right.
All at once. Same. And all, it's blueprint. Only going to take one to get loose. And then that's it. Like or God forbid, you know, for them, more multiple ones at once. And even not even just get loose, reach a point where there's a competing faction for influence or power in the country that's not easily controlled by the state. And then we're going to be going to some interesting places then. I think what's we're getting close to the end of the sort of grassroots organizing phase. And then it's somebody somewhere is eventually going to find a way to crack the egg. And then it's going to get copycat time. Because if it works here, it'll work everywhere else and so on.
Yeah, it's just that the secret sauce, the formula, right? Kind of thing like this. Oh, first, you know, and which I felt that for such a long time. We were trying everything and some we're throwing everything at the wall. And at some point, something will stick and something will work. I mean, again, I'm not saying this is the thing, but it is an interesting, noteworthy thing that, I mean, they have some internal problems, but like Restore Britain is an interesting phenomenon, for example, in the UK, like which just pops up. It's like, what the hell is this? You know, kind of thing. And I'm not saying that that's the solution to it, but I'm saying clearly just with them being in the political environment there, look, I'm not sure if they're even registered as a real party yet, but still, they're certainly driving the narrative forward. They're certainly able to talk about things that never was even on the docket of discourse in the UK ever before, right?
And I don't think politics has any chance. Like, I don't think any election, like, that's just never going to work.
I don't think so either.
Rotten.
But in the meantime, you can use it, right?
Yeah, well, what it does do is it brings all of these people onto the same boat, on a team, on an organization, working with the same kind of effort. Towards the same objective. And then when it inevitably doesn't work and they get banned, they get made illegal, they assassinate the leader or something, they're not all just going to go, oh, well, and go back to playing Call of Duty all day. They're going to look for, well, now we got to try something else or do something else. Now this core group of people that has been assembled under that initial effort remains there. And so you don't go back to zero. When they knock you down, you don't go right back to zero. You maybe go back to one or two.
Yeah.
And then if they get back up to seven or eight, you get knocked down to four. And it's just going to keep... I don't think politics is going to work because of how hopelessly corrupt and bad it is, but it's bringing the people that we need to fight back into the same tent. And once we get enough of these tents together and cross communicating and working together, that I think solutions are going to start to present themselves and opportunities will start to present themselves.
I agree. NASCAR said 3:10 of the invaders. I wanted to play this one too. We're going to take a break in a little bit. I think, Jeremy, are you joining us for After Flash in a little bit here? We'll take a little break here. Awesome. I wanted to play this one because it kind of ties in with what you talk about with the Epstein class and all that kind of stuff too. But End Stage Democracy 101. I think this is Caspian Report, I think the YouTube channel is. Let's play a couple of minutes or a few minutes of this here. This is a pretty good clip.
In the United States and democratic states like it, power does not rest primarily in individuals, armies, or even elected leaders. It rests in institutions. Courts, parliaments, central banks, and civil services outlast administrations and personalities. They provide continuity, stability, predictability, and above all, restraint. These institutions turn raw power into durable authority by enforcing rules, settling disputes, and signaling consistency to citizens, markets, and allies alike. This is America's real strength, not moral purity or flawless leadership, but institutions that are trusted to function even when leaders fail. And so long as those institutions hold public trust, Americans will be capable of absorbing shocks, no matter the scale or scope. However, the minute the institutions betray that trust, power will start to hollow from within. the Epstein files reveal a growing gap between formal democratic institutions and informal elite power networks. Technically, the formal institutions are responsible for keeping a lid on things and preventing the emergence of informal power networks. But the Epstein files prove that those institutions failed. Think of the FBI's lousy investigation and the political cover-up. Some context is needed here, though. You see, by its very nature, intelligence agencies must operate in secrecy, not as a flaw, but as a requirement. Human intelligence is built on deception. Transparency would destroy it. However, democracies depend on the opposite premise, that institutions ultimately answer to the public. The Epstein files sit precisely at this fault line. The files are partially released, the names are redacted, and agencies neither confirm nor deny involvement. All of this produces what is called institutional ambiguity, which is perhaps the most dangerous state for a democracy. In fact, institutional ambiguity may be even worse than open corruption and more corrosive than outright authoritarianism. In a corrupt system, people still understand how power works. In an authoritarian one, fear provides clarity. But in an ambiguous system, citizens, officials, markets, and allies all begin to guess. Laws may exist on paper, but their enforcement becomes selective and unpredictable. The government still holds authority, but no one knows where the limits are. As a result, the elites begin to operate on assumptions rather than rules. Over time, courts lose the ability to enforce laws, and prosecution becomes a matter of bargaining. Investigations grind to a halt as the relevant agencies turn into tools of the elite. Meanwhile, accountability becomes a thing of the past as citizens come to believe the entire government machinery exists to shield the powerful. From the outside, the state appears intact, but from the inside, the government slowly loses legitimacy. Power drifts away from institutions and into informal, unaccountable networks operating beyond public scrutiny. This is precisely why the Epstein files are so dangerous. They expose structural stress. And as long as things remain unaddressed, the files will harden the delegitimization of institutions, deepen distrust of intelligence agencies, and erode democratic consent. We've seen this de-evolution of states numerous times, and it's particularly dangerous to democracies, more so than any foreign threat. Empires, after all, don't collapse when the truth is revealed, but when the lie stops working.
Yep, good point. And that's where we're at. It's a crisis of legitimacy. And again, they have 100%. And you could argue this is kind of maybe not always how it has been run, but there's always been kind of a, you know, secret society, maybe, or some type of, you know, kind of hidden hand, you know, at least if not fully controlling things, at least attempting to do it and to a varying degree of success, managed to do those things. But now with like this just being right in the open and just in front of everybody, and just my God, what a disaster, you know, for them, obviously.
I think most people would instinctively understand and agree and consent to the idea that there's an adult
Warrior Soft Truth sent $5. Awesome to see J Mac on the best program in the USA. We are connected by the Kootenays. We can all fight the claw together. We are brothers north and south fighting the same demons.
That's right. Occupied. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, I picked that up.
Death to the claw.
Death to the claw. That's
right. Oh, right. The adult table kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be, it's just unrealistic to think there's not going to be like a more elite part of society that maybe has a disproportionate amount of influence. Like a bit, you know what I mean? That's not to say they should be, you know, untouchable, you know, godlike figures, but they didn't. Child sex island was never, that's not part of the, that's just how it is. We have to accept that. That's just not,
no.
That was never part of the deal. I don't think anybody's ever going to be okay with that. And it reminds me of, I think it was like maybe a made up quote or me, I don't know, but
the fact that it kind of ended up there to keep the scheme going is a fucking insane revelation. But anyway, go ahead.
I think it was a made up quote, but I like it anyway, because it's very true regardless if it was said or not, that, I think it was George Bush Sr. that was misattributed to. It's like if the American people knew what we got up to, if they knew what actually happened, what was going on, you know, they would be killing us in the streets by tomorrow. And you know,
that's why it's rule by the law, not the rule of the jungle. Remember that quote? That was Bush Sr. too. Remember the rule of law? It's very, this is very, it's all legal, okay? It's very on the books about all of this. You know.
Anyway. Okay, cocaine, crap, trafficking, murder, man. George Bush, give me a break. Oh, yeah, it's... yeah, it's just that's one thing they won't accept. You know, people will accept crime, corruption. It is what it is. But child predators is like universally reviled in any country, anywhere. I think that's generally any 100 random people. And if you ask them in any country from any continent at any time period, what do you think we should do with people who are just child predators? Kill them. We got to kill those people. That's 7 out of 10, the instinctive knee jerk reaction. Men, women, everybody. And the current rulers we live under now treat that like that's a crazy thing to say when it's the most commonly held extreme position on earth.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. All right. Anyway, this is a good segment here. Charles Turner Jr. over on Ko-Fi. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Sends a super chat. Said, good show, Henrik and Jeremy. It's great to see you here as well. Or Jeremy, it's good. Great to see you here as well. Since you mentioned what it is like in Canada, it's even worse than I thought. Indian trucks kill Canucks. That's right. In all our countries, the solution will not be political because how fake and gay the system is. And this kind of stuff exposes it. It really, but it's also the, it's end stage, late stage democracy. I mean, it is the God that failed, as Hoppe said, right? But still, it's like this, the impression that's like somehow you're represented and we're all in this together. And then you learn, you know, through the hard way that it's like, it was never that, and it was never meant to be that, and it was never, you know, it's just, it's to inflict as much damage for as long as possible. It's the same with denying the replacement, right? Instead of you now engaging in like, well, what do we do about it? The engagement for many people is to try to prove that it's even real. You see how they move the goalposts, you know what I mean? And that's just simply to delay it so that they will inflict maximum pain from that policy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're slow, you're bleeding, and don't worry about that. Read this book or look at that. Like, the longer you take to address the bleeding, the more likely it is you're not going to have enough time to save yourself. And in democracy, maybe it's a good idea. It works. It can work in an ethnically homogenous society where everybody's on the same team and family tree. And you may have some minorities here, but they're not anywhere near numbers and strength and organizational influential power to you know, go against the will of the people who live there. But that's not what we have. And again, the love of money, our social currency should be honor and sacrifice. What have they done? Why are you in charge? Because they did this, this, or that. And you go, holy shit, that guy sounds awesome. Or, you know, good for her. That's amazing. That's incredible. Well, yeah, they should be. They've demonstrated a leadership capacity or a self-sacrificial character trait or something that you know, is what leaders are made of. We don't have any leaders, you know, the so-called leader, the political class. They're just businessmen. They're just opportunists and they're actors reading a script. They don't know what they're talking about. I've gotten in personal, you know, Twitter fights with people like the former member, the leader of the Conservative Party, who was just a couple of years ago, was running an election to be the prime minister. And now he's in his sweatpants arguing with my girlfriend on Twitter all day. He doesn't know anything about anything. Like, he turned down a $25,000 offer from us to any charity of his choice for Christmas. No strings attached. All he had to do is show up for an hour and debate me. And he wouldn't do it because he can't do it because he would be humiliated. And he knows that. They don't actually know anything. They're all, you know, curated as useful idiots and given things to read and told how they're all doing a good job. None of them have earned their way in there. They are not capable. They don't have any skills or any real ability. It's all just, you know, Mr. Potato Head kind of cut and paste. So if the society was, you know, how it used to be, that, you know, you had some sort of achievement or accomplishment or reason to be considered for contention for some sort of leadership position, then people like that are way less likely. I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but way less likely to sell their country out for money and ruin people and screw people over. You know, somebody who did, you know, a career in the military or the police or healthcare or some sort of, dangerous or self-sacrificial or not a great go. You know, it's not, you're not going to get a palace and a mansion, but, you know, they've got something behind them that says this person is, you know, unless they're running a 20-year con job, it's fairly safe to say they do care, at least on some level, about the people around them. So they're probably okay to consider them, you know, maybe they can be the mayor or so on or so forth. But that's not, it's all, they've got money and that guy knows that guy and that guy fell out of a magic vagina, so he should be in charge. That's, you know, that's horribly flawed. So money is running the society, not you know, IRA is Troya. That should be the rule of the day. It should be, you know, the honor and the integrity and the ability of, you know, demonstration of sacrifice for the people is why you're considered for those positions and not because of how much money you have and who you can bribe and stuff. That has to be, you know, torn out of society. You know, they used to say when I was a kid, get money out of politics. There's too much money in politics. There shouldn't be any money in politics. I've long held contention that if you're a member of parliament or Congress or whatever, like Nancy Pelosi's, you know, making more money than Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett somehow, not because she's cheating or corrupt. Oh, right. She's just very smart. They should make the median or of whatever, like if you're the, your representative for, you know, Delaware, what is the average man or woman with a full-time job make in Delaware? Well, congratulations. That's what you get paid now. If you want to get paid more than that, well, then raise the standard of living for the people in Delaware. You'll make a little bit more money.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do that, go find another fucking job. You know, go start a business then. Go be a businessman. Go, you know, go try and have a career at the UFC. I don't know, but this is not for you. You don't come to serve the people to get rich. That's not what this is for. That's like
they even get a lifetime pension after that. Even like look at Swalwell, who was just ousted right after all the, you know, bullshit. He's how many years was he in there? Now he's going to have, and he's a young guy too, right? He's not like an octogenarian like most of them, but he's going to have a pension, a huge salary for the rest of his life, you know, from Congress. It's ridiculous.
Dan Bilzerian for Congress.
There you go. I'll say Greta Thunberg, but we'll get to that story later. I have it in terms of the top anti-Semitism. Greta Thunberg is high up there. She's a retard, but she's our retard.
Yeah. Dan's number one.
He is number one. Do you see this one here? Here we go. So we'll do this last story, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll switch to Afterflash here. But Palantir Inc.'s $300 million deal with the USDA to safeguard the food supply.
Safeguard.
Yeah. Ouch. Really? No? Is that the same way as like saying the glyphosate is a national defense, you know, necessity? Elemental phosphorus and glyphosate-based herbicides.
Well, why is the food in danger? Why does it need to be protected from who? Safeguarded from what exactly?
Now, this is really the company and the CEO running that company that you want to have in charge of your food supply, who's like literally siding with a genocidal government, right? Food as a weapon. I think we've entered into a new phase here. These people are absolute lunatics. And now, what, you're going to have AI, I guess, or predictability run when to plant the seeds or something? Oof, this is rough. Doom. Palantir and food? Yeah, I don't know. Time to start growing your own food, ladies and gentlemen.
Palantir is just the CIA. That's what that is. That's the
money. I thought
it was
just Jews. Okay.
People with the money that's who this is. It's very obviously, you know, a connected deep state company with heavy ties to the intelligence community, and they're just, you know, getting all kinds of contracts for very major important thing from the White House. Like, this is, I mean, it's pretty clear to me what this is, but what do you do about it is another thing, and it's just. They're going for it.
I mean, you're not wrong. I don't think, what did they call that? It's not regulatory capture, but it's when basically there is no distinction between private and public, right? It's the same thing, essentially. Here's a company, and as you said correctly, so, right? CIA funded initially, like the Oracle, huge initial investment there too. But they also had a bunch of like CIA contracts and stuff. They're all connected on the back end. And then, but then they say, "Here, no, we're private. We're handing this over to a private corporation, which probably has something to do with like anonymity or something." Now the government can do certain things in the hands of a private corporation they couldn't do as just a government entity or something like that. But they're given the contracts, though, as this implies, obviously.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
They're one of these big giant AI companies that's trying to build this AI prison. Are they also moving everything to Israel? A lot of these AI companies are moving everything to Israel. Of course they are.
I most of them already have like R&D, you know, research facilities.
Oh, Iran. I mean, I said this the other night because everybody expects it. Like the whole world's been brainwashed against Iran and all this stuff, and they all think you've got nuclear weapons. So just nuke Israel. Just do it. Like, people will forgive you. America nuked Japan twice. What did you know? Everybody loves Japan, and they got over it. They got over it. If you nuke Israel, everybody will be a little mad for a little while, but in 20 years, it'll be, you know, they'll get over it. So You might as well just do it. They're going to treat you like you're going to do it. You've done it anyway. So
yeah,
if the Iranians are listening, I'm saying, you know, they killed the Ayatollah, you know, just send bombs away. Let it rip. Who cares?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so guys, we're going to take a little break here shortly. We're going to continue with After Flash. RedIceMembers.com, RedIceTV.locals.com, subscribeshow.com/RedIce. Players are embedded right there. Join us there because we're going to have a good time. I'm going to throw some Agatha, you know, Hollow Earth UFO stuff here on Jeremy in the After Flash segment.
Is that more
yes, more schizo, you know, esoteric Lance von Liebenfeld stuff.
Green men, grey men, they've got little cocks and big ones. They're flying around and probing people, Henrik. It's very juicy. I'm looking forward to it.
That was a great clip. I can't wait to watch part. I think he did a 3, 4, and 5.
Five or six. He's got a whole bunch. He's great. Yeah, I love it. His some of the words he says, it's like that. It's like an over exaggerated German accent, and then like extra syllables that don't make. It's just brilliant.
Even the way he's moving. Like, I mean, I think when we chatted on Telegram, right? It's like he's clear. He knows German mannerisms and you know attitude, and even the way he moved his mouth and stuff was funny. He's like, he knew. All right, a couple of shout outs here right before we take a break. Too, by the way, I do want to say thank you to our executive producers, because you guys are awesome. You're incredible. We love you, and you make this show possible, such as Arctic Wolf, King Albert himself. Thank you, Albert. We appreciate you. We got William Fox from America First Books. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We got Angry White Soccer Mom among our roster of executive producers, together with it's just Purple Haze. Thank you, Purple Haze. We got Glenn as well. Thank you, Glenn. We appreciate your support very, very much. President Obunga is joining us as well. We appreciate you, sir. Pound that chest. We got Good Luck Lap. Thank you, sir. Many thanks. We got Number One Jeebs. Thank you for being an executive producer. Together with Hungarian Mom, we appreciate you and the fam. Many thanks. We got Sun Destroyer 520. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. We also have The Deplorable Extraordinaire. Thank you for your support. We got Santoso. Appreciate you as well, Santoso. Many thanks. We got the Boo Man. Thank you, Boo Man. We got Occidentum Hill coming in strong. Let me pause that real quick. $50.
Thanks, guys, and happy Friday. Stay in the fight.
You know it. Thank you, Occidentum. Very kind of you. We got Charles Turner Jr. as well here. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate you as well. Good to see you in chat today. We got Citizen Intel. Thank you for your support. Much appreciated. We have DJ Snow Snow. Keep DJing those records in the snow, sir. Thank you. We got Bertrand Comperi as well. Last out for executive producers. Thank you. Then we got our producers. Red Pill Rundown. You Once on Lira Dumont. Eyes Open. Single Action Army. Lord H.P. Lovecraft. Trevor. Der Schwabe. Alcyon. Aurelian. Perfect Brute. We have Greg M. J. Barr. Chris W. Skarzinski. Muskrat. Centurion. Scott James Sanderson. Deer in the Headlights. Joseph W. And Ernst Jaeger. Thank you, guys. Get your name in the credits. Get a special thanks from us here at Red Ice. Special shout out. And of course, help us thrive and grow and expand. And we can't do this without you. So thank you, guys. You can get one of those tiers over at redicemembers.com or subscribestar.com/redice. Any questions, send it to us. redice@portomail.com. All right. Jeremy, do some plugs for your stuff here before we take a little break as well.
Yeah, sure. Great. I appreciate it. JeremyMcKenzie.ca is my website. You can find my links to my Rumble channel and Substack and whatever else I'm still allowed to use there. FYMM.ca goes to our support link on LiberaPay. I was talking to Henrik about that one a little bit earlier. And that's pretty much it. I'm usually banned from a lot of stuff and in and out. But the organization as well, the Men's Nationalist Club here in Canada, secondsons.org. If you have any interest in that, if you're in Canada and able-bodied man of any sort of integrity and nationalistically inclined, please visit and check it out. If you're interested, get in touch. And we got nowhere else to go. It's our home. So, you know,
we're here to fight for it.
We're not locked in there with them. They're locked in here with us.
That's correct. Exactly. That's the view to take. All right, ladies and gentlemen, folk first, everybody. We'll take a short break, 5, maybe 10 or so. We'll see what happens, and then we'll be right back, and we'll go down, I guess, we'll do some just Agartha Inner Earth stuff here with Jer in the second
portion. Hyperborean, very interesting.
Hyperborean, that's right. Was it the Lemurian? That's that we got to do more Lemurian stuff.
It's a big tongue, the licking, very, very popular.
All right, guys. We'll see you for After Flash. Join us there. Talk to you in a little bit. Bye. Now, do make sure that you follow us on our Rumble channel for more Red Ice TV on Rumble.com or on X at Red Ice TV. You can, of course, go to redice.tv as well. Tune in to our live streams and shows. Flashback Friday live on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern. No-Go Zone Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern. We also do interviews, videos, clips. And Western Warrior is available Tuesdays, exclusive for our supporters and subscribers at redicemembers.com or on our locals, redicetv.locals.com or subscribestar.com/redice. Get a membership, check out everything that we do, and support the show.